Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
College was hopping over the weekend, and we thought it would be a great day to get Danny Cannell, Tiki's former teammate, obviously a former college star, playing in the NFL as well. You see him on CBS Sports HQ. He's a football analyst. He's part of the CBS Sports Network crew as well. Danny Cannell is in the house. What up, Danny? How are you?
What's going on, Brandon? Tiki, how are you guys doing? I'm so glad you guys called at this exact moment because I was just getting into some Twitter beef with some Ohio State Buckeyes blog, and it's driving me nuts. So I'm glad you guys interrupted that because nothing good comes.
No, Danny, stop. Bring the beef to the Tiki and Tierney Airways. What were you beefing about? What was going on?
Let me guess. They're saying this is the best Ohio State team that they've ever seen.
The whole time.
And that, you know, Day has done an amazing job. He's better than, you know, Urban Meyer, and Justin Fields is going to win the Heisman Trophy.
They're better than Bama.
Yes, they are. They're getting a little chesty. They want to puff out their chest and start talking a little bit, and they deserve to, right? They've been awesome, including another win that they chalked up against Michigan State, which to me was probably the best test they've had this year. And so that's one thing they've been bothered by. I have them ranked at number 3 in my my poll that I do every week. And apparently that isn't high enough, but their biggest beef is that I still have Clemson at 1, and call me old-fashioned, it doesn't make a lot of sense. It's just kind of a thing that I've done for the past 7 or 8 years. I think if you're the defending national champion, if you have won 20 games in a row, if you still have your coach and both your coordinators intact, if you still have your quarterback returning and a lot of offensive weapons, and even if you don't really, I still do it. But if you won the national championship, I feel like you have the right to defend your spot. And Clemson dropped in the polls because of a couple weeks ago, they looked bad against North Carolina. But guess what they didn't do? They didn't lose.
Yep.
So they're still undefeated, and that just kind of bothers me that we get so cute with these polls, and they don't matter. They're kind of dumb. But, like, when people start dropping Clemson to the 7th and 8th spot, I'm like, really? You guys are going to hold them that much against them? I get it wasn't pretty, but they're still an incredibly talented team. So that's what my beef of Ohio State is. They're mad at me because I still have Clemson 1. And I get it. Like, hey, if you said who do you think would win Clemson versus Ohio State, I think that's a different conversation, and maybe I would pick Ohio State. But, man, you would think I, like, disrespected everyone's mom by the amount of disrespect they feel has been shown him. All because I have Ohio State at 3, mind you. 3.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like you dropped them out of the top 10. Look, they have a bye week this weekend, and they play Northwestern, a game they should win, even though it's even on the road and it's pesky Northwestern. And they play Wisconsin, and that's when it will matter. They'll face Jonathan Taylor and J.K. Dobbins, who actually has more rushing yards on the season than Jonathan Taylor, will give us some interest. But let me jump over to Clemson since we were talking about them briefly. What do you think is the issue with their – I mean, because, look, they're winning, and that's all that matters. But they don't feel like the same team that we saw destroy their way through the college football playoffs last year, and that's including against Alabama. What's different about them this year?
So, Tiki, I think we're seeing a phenomenon develop like in the college ranks where it's really, really hard to repeat as national champion. And for whatever reason, teams get kind of complacent, and they just kind of start going through the motion. It's funny. Because Ohio State, back in 2015, after they won the championship in 2014, they had a similar type season to what Clemson is having now. Mm-hmm. They kind of were sluggish through the regular season, and then they ended up losing, and didn't get in. So then Alabama wins the national championship. Then they look sluggish, and Clemson comes up and takes the national championship. And guess what Bama did? They woke up, and they got fired up, and then they knocked out Clemson out of the playoff 2 years ago. And then, by the way, guess what happened last year? Clemson has all those guys return from the defensive side of the ball. They're on a mission, right? And they achieve their mission, and they go on to win the national championship. And now, guess what? Like, Ohio State kicked off. They were left out. Bama's mad. They got beat. I don't know what it is, but there's something about the focus level and the intensity level and the sense of urgency that teams that don't win the championship have. And for whatever reason, we're seeing this trend creep in. It's human nature. It's, you know, whatever you want to call it.
18, 19-year-olds.
Yeah, it's hard for them to stay amped up. So yeah. I would say Clemson looks sloppy. They don't look as interested. I think they assume they're going to win because they do have more talent. And you know how this is. I mean, they have more talent, but if you come out and you sleepwalk through games, you're going to get picked off. But I still feel like if they get things back on track, which they could, they're still one of the best teams in the country. But they better wake up or wake up in a hurry, or else they'll get knocked off, even with the pretty easy schedule remaining.
And, Danny, by the way, the difference is, you know, back in the day, and I'm sure you did this, Teak, I don't know if you and Rondé did this. I used to do this with both football and hoops. You know, they didn't find out how great they were until SI put out the season preview.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, wow, let me read about myself. I am great. Now they could just search their own names, and they can find out how great they are by the hour. So that's probably adding to the complacency a bit. But I think we'd be remiss, Danny. That's Danny Cannell, of course, 8 years in the NFL, CBS Sports HQ, Tiki's former teammate. If we didn't at least get Danny Cannell's line of delineation, how, in terms of being championship viable, how many teams are you willing to stretch down? Now, obviously, Auburn didn't look good. We go in 7, we go in 8. You count in Wisconsin, do you give Penn State a shot? Where's your cutoff line for teams that you think have a puncher's chance to win the title?
So, Brandon, what I've started to do to kind of help myself, like, kind of put these teams, so I put them in tiers. And where I've made an adjustment, I did make an adjustment 2 weeks ago when Clemson struggled a little bit. It used to be Alabama and Clemson were in their own tier, their own stratosphere, if you will, at the top of college football. And over the last, like the course of this season, I've said, you know what? They don't look quite as dominant as they thought they would be.
Mm-hmm.
So my top tier is really six teams. And it's Bama, Clemson. It's really the top six in the AP poll, too. It's Bama, Clemson, Ohio State, Georgia, LSU, and Oklahoma. And then there's the second tier, which I do think they're capable, you know, and that would include the Florida Gators. That's Wisconsin, as you mentioned. That's even Notre Dame, who looks pretty good in the loss. Penn State is flying under the radar. Texas is still in that conversation. Auburn and Oregon. So
okay.
That's the 13. That would be the second tier. There is no way I'm picking anybody outside of the top 13 to win the national championship.
Okay.
And even in that second tier, I wouldn't put a meaningful amount of money on them. Maybe if you wanted to get some odds and take a flyer and say, hey, maybe Notre Dame runs the table. They correct some of their issues. They looked pretty good against Georgia. They could get in. Penn State might take a flyer on them. They've looked really good against, really haven't played anybody yet. But really, I do firmly believe that the national champion is going to come from one of those top six teams. With LSU being that team that's kind of new to this conversation, they've got a great test this weekend against the Florida Gators, who are going to Baton Rouge. The Gators just beat Auburn. But LSU has something they haven't had over the past 20 years, and that's an offense that is lighting people up.
Yeah.
And so that's why I kind of feel like LSU is this dark horse that hasn't been in this conversation recently because they haven't been able to get past Bama. But I feel they're a little bit different this year. So that's a team that I kind of like in that top six. It's kind of flying under the radar.
Yeah, it's because of Joe Burrow and the fact that they play at lightning fast pace with their offense. But a team that I know you loathe talking about, because back in your day as a Seminole, it was an actual rivalry. It's not much of a rivalry anymore. The Florida Gators, they're actually playing fantastic defense, allowing less than 9 points a game on that side of the ball. They just beat this Auburn team, as we were just talking about. But it really felt like their viability, to BT's question, changed when Felipe Franks, you hate to root for injury, but I mean, once he got hurt and Kyle Trask became their quarterback, they feel like a different squad. Well, why is it so different for Florida with Trask, who shouldn't be this good, but he is?
It's easy, Tiki. It's one word. It's consistency. You know what you're going to get with Kyle Trask. He's been, really, that term game manager is used in an insult sometimes, but really, Peyton Manning was the best game manager that the sport has ever seen. Like, that should be a compliment.
Yeah.
And that's what you get with Kyle Trask. You know he's going to put you in good positions. He's not going to give you foolish turnovers. He's tough, as we saw, as he got knocked out of the game. And he just has a way of kind of making plays and not making the big mistake. And what you get with that team, when you have a defense that's that talented, you can get away with that. Now, that's my big question is, can they still win with this game manager against LSU, who I think is going to put up some points against Florida? And I do think that's going to hold Florida back somewhat. But I think they're way ahead of the ball when you look at Dan Mullen being hired. They brought him in specifically to develop the offense, and the offense has been much better. And he's maximizing his quarterback. I mean, Dan Mullen is the ultimate quarterback whisperer, if you will, going back to when he developed Alex Smith at Utah. Tim Tebow at Florida when he was the offensive coordinator, Dak Prescott when he was coaching at Mississippi State, and now he's doing it with a career backup in Kyle Trask. We shouldn't be surprised, but I do think it's a credit to Dan Mullen and his skills that he brings as this quarterback guru, if you will.
So we're talking to Danny Kanell, and Danny, part of the crew here, CBS Sports Network, CBS Sports HQ, and he's with us here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, former quarterback, of course, 8 years in the NFL. You know, I don't need to exhaust this, but I really want to get your opinion on one thing that I did see that gets buried because they wound up getting waxed. And I know we already touched on Georgia, but I was bouncing around going through a lot of games, as we all do on Saturdays, right? And I happened to catch Tennessee at the right time when, I don't even know if you say it Moore or Maurer. Brian Moore, the freshman quarterback, is it Moore?
Moore, yep.
Okay. And I see him on Cork, a 72-yard bomb, and he's a true freshman. His mom and dad were going bonkers in the stands, which is great. I'm like, let me check on this kid. And I went and did a little research on Rivals and 24/7 Sports to see who was recruiting him. Three-star kid, 6'3", 190. He's got to put on some weight, obviously. But none of the blue bloods, seemingly, at least from the info that I came across, were pursuing him with any sort of vigor. He looked good. I know they got smoked. I get that. But is he Tennessee's quarterback of the future? Because what I saw, I thought he looked pretty good.
Yeah, I think that's why they went to him, too, because they just made the switch, Jeremy Pruitt did, from Jarek Guaratondo, who's been their starter for a couple of years now, maybe even 3 years. But they started off the season really rough. They were 1-3, and Guaratondo just looked like he had a crisis of confidence. He had been shot. In his defense, they've been through two head coaches and four offensive coordinators and four quarterback coaches. Like, I can't even fathom that.
Ugh.
I was lucky enough to play for one head coach, one coordinator, one quarterback coach. Like, it's tough to learn when you're getting new systems everywhere. But I do think, like, this switch was made to start looking for the future. And Brian Moore is a little bit more athletic, which is the trend of the game. We're getting quarterbacks who can do more outside the pocket. And that's clearly what they did. But to answer your question, he's the quarterback of the future. I think he's the quarterback for the rest of this year. And then Tennessee's just in the spot where they're going to be recruiting guys, trying to find, maybe they get a five-star. Maybe Brian Moore is that guy and he can hold off any kind of contenders there.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they know who the quarterback of the future is. Even with Moore, even if he excels this year,
mm-hmm.
I think this program is really struggling right now to kind of get this thing turned around. Maybe it's him, but I wouldn't say that definitively, hey, this is the guy for the future.
Okay, that's good intel. I didn't know. Yeah. I was curious. Good job on that, Danny.
Does Pruitt survive year two?
I hope so. Like, a few weeks ago we were talking, you know, in the national landscape about Willie Taggart. Does he survive year two? Jeremy Pruitt, does he survive year two? Chip Kelly at UCLA, does he survive year two? We're in year two. Like, do people realize how foolish that sounds?
He's trying to influence cops, though, Danny.
That is true. Now, that one is pretty rough, and he did kick off the kid off the team this past weekend.
Yeah, he did.
But you know how it works.
Yeah, of course.
If you win, you're going to get a lot of those more excused. I would say, just from a strictly football-speaking standpoint, that you'd be crazy to fire a coach after just 2 years. Like, you're tying his hands. He hasn't even got his recruits through there. But if it goes sideways and they go 2-10, you see that type of year.
Oof.
Same thing with Florida State, which Florida State looks like it's dodged that kind of year so far, but they have Clemson this week, so who knows what's going to happen. Or if UCLA looks like they could be on pace for maybe a 2-10 year, you never know. But even still, I would say you have to evaluate the program itself. Are the players responding? Are you recruiting well? Are guys leaving the program? That's when I think you have more of a problem. And it is tougher than ever to appease fans when you're making $4 and $5 million. They don't have much patience, and I get it, but it doesn't make a lot of sense because you are starting from scratch again.
Yeah,
and it makes it so tough. So yeah, I think Jeremy Pruitt survived, but it's going to be a bumpy ride on the way there for sure.
Hey, one last one for you, Danny. Let's go out west real quick. Stanford.
Yep.
Surprisingly, beat Washington over the weekend, and we always have this conversation about the strength and or mostly the weakness of the Pac-12. Oregon had a big win over Cal this weekend. I'm not playing great in that game, but they found a way to win it. They're sitting at 4-1. They probably have the best chance here. But are they going to beat each other up, or is this conference stronger, or are they still weak? I don't know how to really evaluate the Pac-12 after 5 weeks of the college football season.
So, see, I'm wondering if Seth Edelstein, our producer over there at CBS Sports Network, put you up to this question. He probably didn't. You're just a smart guy. But I was wrong in such a big way on Stanford this past weekend because we were previewing all these college games, and they were playing against Washington, and I was like, why are we on air? I'm like, this game's going to be a joke. Washington's going to roll. Stanford's awful this year. They got blown out by UCF. I'm sitting there just railing on Stanford. They go and beat Washington, and I think it's I think it's a combination, Tiki. I don't think Stanford is great this year. Clearly Washington is great, but I think there's a lot of good football teams in the Pac-12. Oregon really is becoming their last hope to make the playoff, and I think Oregon's a really good football team. David Shaw is kind of struggling this year, but that was a big win for them, and it's kind of this cannibalization of the Pac-12, which we see more prevalent in the conferences that play nine conference games. I think that's a big, you know, kind of takeaway for me when I look at the Pac-12. When the SEC and ACC are playing eight conference games, and usually that extra game where the Pac-12 is playing a conference foe, the SEC or ACC are playing like these directional schools. They're favored by four touchdowns. It's an easy win. And then the Pac-12 starts beating each other up, and they start falling out of the top 25. It's like, God, that conference isn't any good. And I would just be cautious making that sort of a blanket statement on the Pac-12 because they have a lot of pretty good football teams. What they desperately need is a Clemson from the ACC. The ACC is struggling, but at least they have Clemson. The SEC has always had Bama. You know, the Big 12 has had Oklahoma. The Pac-12 desperately needs that team that can get through, and it's probably going to have to be with one loss, and it's probably going to have to be Oregon in order to stay relevant in the national conversation, or else they just kind of get left in the dust and people forget about them.
Danny Cannell, one of the great collegiate careers, 8 years in the NFL, played with Teague for a little bit as well, and CBS Sports HQ, CBS Sports Network. I catch him a little bit. Say hi to your boy Tori for us. You guys do a good job. I like
it. You got it, man. I will for sure, Brandon. I absolutely will.
Good chatting with you, Danny.
Appreciate you, buddy.
You too, Teague. See you guys.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.